So was President Bush right about Islam? And what can we expect from America in 2016?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I did not expect to be in the midst of a snowstorm in Texas, in Eastland, Texas, but that's where I find myself. Coming away live today, this is Michael Brown. Delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH. As always, the number to call, 866-348-7884. What I'm going to try to do each day this week when I'm taking phone calls, which should be every day except tomorrow, each day this week as I'm taking phone calls, I want to open the phone lines for any question you want to ask me about anything, just to have a little fun towards the end of the year, and to give you opportunity. We know that many of you try to get through on Fridays when you've got questions, we've got answers, and phone lines are often especially jammed on Fridays. Sometimes the same thing happens on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. So if you want to ask me anything, even if it's completely off topic, I'll try to weave some phone calls in along the way. 866-348-7884. I want to talk to you about a bunch of things today. One is, what's coming in 2016? What can we anticipate spiritually, politically, even beyond that? I don't claim to have prophetic words, but I do have some thoughts that I believe have something behind them based on reflection, based on looking ahead, based on looking back. I want to share some of that with you. And also, something very, very interesting. President Obama, Hillary Clinton are now defending their position that they won't speak of radical Islam, that radical Islam is not real Islam. You can speak about Islamic terror. That's wrong. Just better to speak of terrorism because it's not Islamic. They are now quoting President Bush and saying, hey, President Bush was right. Now, it's quite interesting. You don't expect to hear President Obama and Hillary Clinton say President Bush was right about much of anything. Many of the difficulties that we've experienced in the last 8 years, President Obama, of course, would say, well, those were the result of the Bush policies. So the question is, why are they saying President Bush was right about Islam? Well, many people that don't respect President Obama do respect President Bush, and vice versa. Many people that do not respect President Bush respected President Obama. Either way, they say, hey, we agree on this. Here's the last president of the United States saying the same thing I'm saying. No one was accusing, by President Obama, no one was accusing President Bush of being a secret Muslim. Many accused President Obama of being a secret Muslim. In fact, something like 30% or 40% of Americans think that he could be a Muslim. Obviously, no one accused President Bush of being a Muslim. And yet, President Bush also said Islam is a religion of peace. And therefore, be it the Taliban, be it Al-Qaeda, be it ISIS, be it any of these other groups, they are not true Muslims. They are not really practicing Islam. Was President Bush right? Was President Bush accurate? Now, certainly President Bush and President Obama have all kinds of intel that we could never imagine or dream of. And President Obama certainly had more experience with Islam than many of us, spending some of his childhood years in Indonesia, which is based on secular expressions of Islam, but is still an Islamic country with a massive Islamic population. And President Bush had good ties to the Saudi royal family, correct? And certainly they would understand what Islam is. So maybe these presidents know something we don't know. Ah, I differ. Oh, they know tons of things we don't know and that we'd never have access to because we're not the president of the United States and nowhere near the intel and information and connections that they have and they get. That being said, there's no question whatsoever that President Bush is quite wrong. I've got a very interesting quote from a book with 111 questions on Islam and the West. You'll find it fascinating. And your calls and a lot more when we come back. 866-34-TRUTH.
Change the world. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown coming your way live from Eastland, Texas. And boy, it is cold here. Snow on the ground, maybe 34, 35 degrees outside. Definitely a little bit unexpected weather for Texas. 866-34-TRUTH. And yes, some real weather tragedies in Texas and other parts of America. Some tragic events, terrible loss of life. Just a reminder to each of us to live each day with joy for the Lord, to live each day in such a way that at the end of the day you don't have regret. If you don't want to live your life with regret and always look back with, squandered time and squandered relationships and squandered opportunities, I really encourage you, friend, to take advantage of every day and to focus on every day and the relationships that you have and the opportunities that you have. Not in a pressured way where you feel this unhelpful push that it's even unnatural, that just forces you to do things, but rather to celebrate each day and to look for opportunities to be a blessing, to make sure that you treat people close to you is the way that you'd want to treat them if you weren't going to see them again, that you wouldn't think, man, I was so mean or I was so insensitive or I was so selfish. And by God's grace, we can live every day in a positive, life-giving, Jesus-exalting way, even if we don't have amazing opportunities to share the gospel or world-shattering testimonies. There's still something redemptive we could do every day, and there are redemptive prayers that we can pray. 866-34-TRUTH. So I'm reading a book by a scholar of Islam, a Catholic scholar, Samir Khalil Samir, and it's called 111 Questions on Islam and the West. And he is quite scholarly in Quran and in Islamic theology and in Islamic jurisprudence and in Islamic history. Many of his views I share. He's far more learned in these areas than I am. His views of Israel's conflict with the Palestinians, he is much more sympathetic to the Palestinian side and much harsher on Israel. I would be kind of the opposite side of much of that. So all that to say, we don't share all the same ideological views. And I'm sure theologically within our views of Christianity, there are differences. But I just want to focus on what he has to say on Islam. There's a question, this question number 24 in the book. In the Western world, and in some moderate Muslim environments, people often say that the Mujahideen, so the Islamic freedom fighters, are not true Muslims, that their actions are contrary to the spirit of Islam, that Islam etymologically means peace and tolerance and so on. Is this opinion correct? This is the opinion of President Bush, now being quoted by President Obama. And the scholar says this, most Westerners who accept these statements usually know very little about Islam. So they willingly accept these erroneous theories coming from Muslim sources. The words Islam and Salam actually derive from the same root, but they do not have a direct relationship. In Arabic, the root SLM, equivalent to SHLM in Jewish and in all Semitic languages, means to be healthy, to be in peace, hence Shalom, etc. And there is a semantic relationship between peace, salvation, and health. In Arabic, salam means peace, salama means health, and Islam means submission or surrender. The word Islam derives from the verb aslama, which means to submit or to abandon oneself to. Therefore, Islam is the act of abandoning oneself or of submitting oneself to God. It does not mean to put oneself in a state of peace, even if someone for spiritual reasons might offer this non-etymological meaning. Violence was clearly part of Muhammad's life. And he said, it is interesting to note that the first biographies of the founder are not named Sirah, as they claim to be called in the 3rd century of Hijra, the 9th century of the Christian era, but rather Kitab al, this is written in English, I've got to make sure I'm reading it in proper Arabic, Kitab al-Maghazi, that is the Book of the Raids. It was Muhammad himself, as a political leader, who systematically conducted these raids. He organized them and then conquered one after the other, the different Arab tribes. When the tribes submitted to him and to his God, they paid a tribute, which Muhammad allowed Muhammad to start new conquests. Don't let anyone tell you that the meaning of Islam is peace, and that Islam, by definition, is a religion of peace. That is not accurate. Now, we are seeing something interesting in America, and now the UK reporting the same thing, as our governments have asked for help. They have reached out to the Muslim world and said, help us. Help us gather intel about terrorists. Help us gather intel about those that want to kill Americans or kill Brits or kill others. Help report things that you see. I have read reports now from America and looking at reports now from the UK that say that the Muslim community is providing almost no help. In England, about 10% of the tips they get are coming from Muslims, that Muslim leaders are saying this is just a way of gathering information about our people. They're just looking at it as some type of religious profiling. And rather than saying, yes, we are very loyal to the countries in which we live and we want to stop terrorism, even if it looks like we have to undermine some of our fellow Muslims, but because we don't share their radical ideology, we'll do that. No, they are being more devoted to, showing more solidarity with their own people, even extremists, than with the government. That's troubling. I appeal to every Muslim listening to me. Even if you are a Muslim first and an American second, there are plenty of Christians who'd say I'm a Christian first and American second, or a Jew first and American second. I can respect that, but still, we must work together to fight against terror. Listen, if there were, quote, Christian extremists who were plotting to kill or destroy, every Christian that I know without hesitation would report on them. Everyone, first, they're out to kill and destroy, and if we're followers of Jesus, then we oppose that. We oppose the taking of innocent life. And secondly, because they are, I have no Christian solidarity to protect a murderer or terrorist. God forbid. God forbid. Same thing if it was a Jewish person this person was plotting to blow up some building. Every religious Jew that I know would want that person to be found out. They would want that person to be found out. And secular Jews, of course, all the more, would want that person to be found out. They wouldn't say, well, because this person's a religious Jew or they're claiming to be a religious Jew, that we should cover. No. So that's troubling. If you're a Muslim listening to me, fine. Absolutely. Say you're a Muslim first and American second. That doesn't trouble me at all. But be faithful to the country in which you live and be faithful to preserve innocent life. And if you believe that Islam is a peace-loving religion, then demonstrate it by helping to report on terrorists. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Monmouth, New Jersey. Mike, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Dr. Brown, a pleasure to be on the air with you. We're a little
Thank
warm
you.
Up here in New Jersey. We're around 45. But, there's a book by a gentleman named Massad Hassan Youssef, who you may have read it, called The Son of Hamas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and he was literally groomed to be a leader of Hamas, and you can YouTube a lot of things he has to say. But one of the things that he said is that all you have to do is kind of look at two Quranic verses, Surah 9:5 and Surah 9:29. There's plenty of others, but it says, you know, wherever you find the unbelievers, slay them. Okay, and that there is no. Doesn't say, you know, look, Jesus talked about you'll know people by their fruits, okay? I could say I'm a Christian and walk around with a bazooka. Now, obviously, I'm not acting the way Christ did, okay?
Yep.
The terrorists are acting the way Muhammad did. Muhammad, as I'm sure you know, had many Jewish people beheaded. Muhammad lost his life because a Jewish woman who Muhammad killed, family members, had some of his food poisoned.
And let me just jump in. Certainly, as we said, and as is universally recognized. Muhammad was not just a spiritual leader, but a spiritual leader, political leader, and a military leader. And he did advance the cause of Islam with the sword. He did raid and attack surrounding tribes. There was forcible conversion to Islam. It's really impossible to deny that. And here's the deal, Mike. As I continue to study these issues more, to renew my Arabic studies from years back, and to study Quran and Quranic theology and jurisprudence more and more to try to get a better understanding of things so I can represent things fairly, there's no question that you have two traditions preserved, the violent and the nonviolent, and both represent Islam. And the violent is the one that was predominant, especially in the earliest decades and centuries. It's just undeniable. Thank you, sir.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, blessed and delighted to be with you in this last week before the new year. Tomorrow, I want to bring a special word of encouragement to you from the scriptures based on two words, but God. So be sure to tune in. I think you'll be encouraged and blessed tomorrow. We've got some special guests and a lot of great things to talk about through the rest of the week. And as always, your calls, 866-348-7884. Hey, just a reminder, if we have been a blessing to you this year, if this radio broadcast has been a blessing to you, if we've helped you, if we've equipped you, if we've encouraged you, if we've challenged you, if we've strengthened you, if in any way I have been able to serve as your voice of moral and cultural and spiritual revolution, would you help us with a year-end gift? We are poised to move into 2016 like never before. We are ready to see amazing things happening and have so many plans in progress to do everything we're doing even more effectively, to touch more people more powerfully. If you've been blessed, if you've been helped, your gift of any size, your year-end tax-deductible gift, would be greatly appreciated. Maybe you've been praying about where to sow your seed. Hey, this is a great place. If we've been a blessing to you, Galatians 6, let him who's taught in the word share all good things with his teacher. This is a way of you saying, hey, thank you. Not only that, let's work together. Let's partner together to see this word, this gospel, these truths have an even greater impact on more and more people in America and around the world. To stand with us, just go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on donate or call 1-800-278-9978, and we'd be delighted to hear from you. All right, before I take some more phone calls, let me go back to explaining something about Islam. For those who are not familiar with this, there are distinct portions of Muhammad's career, and there are verses that were allegedly revealed to him during one portion, the Mecca portion, which is then subdivided, and then the Medina portion. And during the Mecca time, this was more the time of tolerance. This was more the time of no compulsion in religion. And then the Medina time is marked more by warfare and battle against, quote, the unbelievers, initially polytheists, and then from there, those are the first people that Muhammad would have encountered that were, quote, unbelievers. But then when the people of the book, the Christians and the Jews, rejected his message, now they were also in that negative category, and they could be fought against in different ways. Well, you say, how do you know which tradition should be followed? They're both there. They're both reflected in the Quran, and they're both reflected in Islamic thought afterwards. You say, well, there is the principle called abrogation. So a later word from Allah abrogates an earlier one. So if Muhammad claimed to have received revelation A that said there's no compulsion in religion, but then later received revelation B that says there is compulsion in religion, you kill the unbeliever, fight against them, etc. Well, then the latter abrogates the former. Well, that is true. But there are lengthy Islamic discussions about which verses are abrogated and so on, and there is not uniformity of view. There is not one view that this is what everybody holds to. And the way it breaks down is this, that radical Muslims like ISIS, who are seeking to restore the caliphate, who are forcing people to live by Islamic law, forcing Muslims, you got to do it this way, this way, this way, this way, this way, they can make a legitimate claim. Radical Islam is a true and valid expression of Islam, without a doubt. And there are also others, noted Islamic leaders in the world today and in past generations, who say no. That is not the way Islam works and operates, and they also have a valid claim because the traditions both exist within Islam and both go back to the Quran. So those who say only radical Islam is true Islam, they are wrong. Those who say radical Islam is not true Islam, they are also wrong. Here is an article on the Daily Beast, Confessions of an ISIS Spy. Abu Khaled had worked with hundreds of foreign recruits to the ISIS banner, some of whom had already traveled back to their home countries as part of the group's effort to sow clandestine agents among its enemies. He said, what you consume in the caliphate is, of course, heavily regulated. He's talking about what you drink. Alcohol is haram. It's forbidden. And if you're found to be drinking, you're likely to receive 80 lashes there in Al-Bab's central square as punishment, speaking of one particular area. The Hizbah drive around expecting what everybody is doing. In Al-Bab, there are maybe 15 to 20 of them, not a lot, but you see them all over. And they're doing this, friends, in the name of Islam. They have a van with a speaker, and they shout, it's prayer time, go to mosque, hurry up, shut your business, you, woman, cover your face. He said women are living in fear in Al-Bab. You see a woman walking in the street. Sometimes she can't see at nighttime because of the niqab, the veil covering her face entirely. It's very hard to see out of the niqab during the day, much less in the dark. Then you hear, cover your head, go home. Friends, this is what is happening, and it's happening in the name of Islam. Speaking of ISIS, another message from their leader, the first in, 7 months, he was allegedly seriously injured in an attack some months back, and now he gave this message, a typical arrogant message from the head of ISIS. And when I say typical, I mean reflecting their mindset. So this was a taped message of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, who, from what I understand, holds a PhD in Islamic theology from a university in Iraq. I would think he understands what Islam is. He says, we're getting closer and closer to you day by day. Speaking to who? Israel. Do not think that we've forgotten about you. It is the obligation of every Muslim to carry out jihad. God has gathered you in Palestine so that the Mujahideen can reach you soon and you will hide by the rock and the tree. Palestine will be your graveyard. That tells me one thing for sure. ISIS is coming down. Sooner or later, ISIS is coming down. And what's interesting, according to Jürgen Todenhofer, a former member of the German parliament, he spent 10 days in ISIS territory in Iraq and Syria, published a book about his experiences. And this is what he said to Jewish News. He said, they are preparing the largest religious cleansing in history. And the only country ISIS fears is Israel. He said, they are not scared of the British and the Americans. They are scared of the Israelis. And he said, they told me the Israeli army is the real danger. He said, we can't defeat them with our current strategy. The IDF, they can fight a guerrilla war. The terrorists were much more confident regarding Western armies in Mosul, for example. He said there are 10,000 fighters living among 1.5 million people in 2,000 apartments, not in one place. So it would be difficult for Western soldiers to fight them. ISIS fighters are ready to die in a war against Western soldiers. Interesting. So you've got the leader saying, oh, yeah, Israel, you're going down. Palestine's your graveyard. And then you have the statement, yeah, the only ones we're afraid of is Israeli army. May God's will be done. Friends, we've expended our apologetics offer. Go to AskDrBrown.org to find out more.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to the Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. 866-34-TRUTH. That is the number to call. And want to grab some calls now and then go back to discussing Islam, talk about what's coming in 2016. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, let's go to Joe in Atlanta, Georgia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, hello, Dr. Brown. What I've got is a little bit off of topic of radical Islam, but I wanted to ask you about your feelings on the Shroud of Turin, and in particular, a scripture verse that sort of seemed unusual to me, 2 Timothy chapter 4, 13, where Paul is talking about bringing a cloak along with the books and the parchments, and just wondering if that might be a possible support for the shroud.
Okay, yeah, I appreciate the question. I have followed things with the Shroud of Turin from a distance with interest. Years ago, a very well-educated friend of mine, medical doctor, said he had looked into it carefully, and he was convinced it was real. Then everything I read since then said it wasn't, it was debunked, it was a fraud. And then I would say after that all the initial negative reports, I read more reports saying that it was real. So on an academic level, Joe, I have no idea. I am open to the possibility that it is real. Okay. I'm not one of those who says it absolutely cannot be. I'm open to the possibility that it's real. And it would not surprise me if it was real, meaning that God did something like that. But I know there are strong arguments against it, and others have their arguments for it, because I'm not close enough to it, and I haven't devoted any serious study to it. All I can give you is my very secondhand opinion. So, Joe, basically, you can ignore what I'm saying because it's not based on any close study or inside information, except to say it could be true. I have not seen sufficient reason to utterly dismiss it. Now, as to 2 Timothy 4:13, I don't see any reference to that whatsoever in terms of a hidden reference to this and that Paul knew about this tradition about the shroud or something like that. So if you look in 2 Timothy 4, so he's giving some instructions, okay, because he's in prison, all right? He's soon going to die, but he's in prison. When you come, bring the cloak that I left with Carpus at Troas, also the books, and above all, the parchments. Winter is at hand, and that seems to be the biggest issue, that it'd be great if he could have the cloak to keep himself warm, because they don't give you what you need there in jail, and the books and parchments. So, no, I wouldn't see any reference to that whatsoever. Just the only thing to deduce from that is study was important to Paul, his study and his reading. Even while they're in prison, and think about the needs of prisoners. You know, that's it, because they get colder in the winter and need a coat. I wouldn't read anything more into it than that, all right?
Okay. Sure, I just thought it was a little unusual that he was asking for a coat along with the books and whatnot, and transportation is probably takes quite some time. But thank you, I appreciate it, and it certainly is a mystery.
You bet. Hey, listen. Right now, where I am in Eastland, Texas, I just went out a little while ago to grab a salad, and it's freezing cold out. And if I had any way of someone bringing me a winter coat as opposed to the little coat I have, I would have gladly done that. So, you know, maybe it would take a matter of weeks or even a month or longer to get something to him. But he needed it, and I don't think there's anything more to it than that. But thank you for the call. 866-348-7884. We'll come back, take some more of your calls, and a bunch more things on Islam, and some discussion on what is coming next, what to expect, what to look forward to. We'll be right back.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire, coming your way live from Eastland, Texas, about an hour, 45 minutes outside of Dallas. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Hey, a question for you. Have you ever looked into the Shroud of Turin? I just posted that on Facebook during the break because I've never really focused on it in any depth. Do you have an opinion? Have you looked at it carefully? Have you looked at it carefully and come to a conclusion that it's just a fraud, or it's just some freak coincidence, or it is something genuine that is the actual burial shroud of Jesus the Messiah? Just curious. I'm not going to devote a whole show to this now. If I did, I'd have some experts on, pro or con. But if you've looked into it, let me know. 866-348-7884. And any question you want to ask me about any subject whatsoever related to anything and any area of expertise I have, I'll grab some phone calls as well along the way. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm looking at a fascinating article here. The Washington Times. Russia accuses the U.S. of protecting ISIS. What do you know? Let's just see here. The Russian Defense Ministry is accusing the Pentagon of fighting the Islamic State in word only after the U.S. military refused to share targeting and intelligence information with Vladimir Putin's forces. Pentagon spokeswoman Michelle Baldanza recently said the U.S. would not cooperate with Russia or Syria until they change their strategy of supporting Assad and instead focus on ISIL. That posture drew the ire of the Russian military. Quote, the hackneyed thesis has once again confirmed that the Pentagon will fight against IS in word only instead of taking real action, said Defense Ministry spokesman Igor Konashenkov, according to the Russian state news agency TASS. Quote, the statement by the U.S. Defense Department spokesperson Michelle Baldanza about the U.S.'s refusal from any cooperation in the fight against Islamic State is a broken record, and it's high time to change it. That is very interesting. Also, read this little article today, worldjewishdaily.com, on Trump, Israel, and the Jews. Donald Trump, Israel, and the Jews, just posted a little while ago. Presidential candidate Donald Trump likes to portray himself as a strong supporter of Israel, but he will be a hard sell to Jewish voters. And then they give three reasons why. I'm not sure how strong these reasons are. According to Eitan Gilboa in the Jerusalem Post, Trump has been outspoken about his support for Israel and the current government of Benjamin Netanyahu, but this probably won't help him much with the Jewish vote for three reasons. One, Trump mocks Senator John McCain for having been a prisoner of war, something that does not resonate well with supporters of Israel, which goes to enormous lengths to get kidnapped soldiers returned. Yeah, I don't know how much that quote is going to be remembered. Obviously, folks will replay it. And then Donald Trump did say several times that he recognized Senator McCain as a prisoner of war and spoke respectfully of that aspect of things. Is that going to be a factor with Jewish voters? My personal opinion, for whatever it's worth, I don't think so. Not a big factor. He made an anti-Semitic joke about Jewish wealth at a speech to the Republican Jewish Coalition. Yeah, the joke didn't go over that well, from what I understand. How big a factor is that going to be? How much stereotyping is going on? Or did Trump consider himself enough of an insider working with so many Jews for so many years that he could freely joke around? He has called for a ban on Muslim immigration to the U.S., which brings up collective Jewish memories of religious and racial discrimination. Interestingly, that could be a concern. In other words, one reason why Jews vote disproportionately Democratic, they, for quite a few elections now, have voted very, very heavily for the Democrats. Maybe they dropped about 10% of their normal overwhelming vote for Democrats and went to Republicans with Mitt Romney. That was because of a deep distrust of President Obama's relationship to Israel and treatment of Prime Minister Netanyahu, and maybe some other reasons as well. But by and large, Jews vote overwhelmingly for Democrats. And one reason is a Jewish fear of any type of a right-wing religious type of government, a Jewish concern of some type of totalitarian regime that will enforce its religious views on others or that will not tolerate the views of minority. Okay, America is supposed to be a Christian nation. Praise the Lord. We say it. We may mean one thing by it, but a Jew hears that. The Jew hears, oh, does that mean laws against us? Does that mean discrimination against us? Does that mean we become second-class citizens? Does that mean we get profiled now as this group that's not Christian? And how does that work out? So there are concerns. And with Donald Trump, not as a Christian, but as a presidential candidate attempting to be a political leader, a national leader, as he says these things, we shouldn't let any Muslims in. Well, Jews could think, okay, yeah, Jews are not Muslims, and Jews are not going around with terrorist sprees around the world and here in America. However, if it could happen to Muslims, it could happen to Jews. Could that be a factor? Perhaps. Well, the article continues, given the fact that American Jews overwhelmingly vote for Democrats anyway, this indicates that Trump will be lucky to garner any of the Jewish vote at all. I'm not so sure about that, though. Could he get as much of the Jewish vote as Romney did? I don't know. I mean, the support he has continues to surprise and come from different quarters. A couple of interesting responses as I look here. Donald Trump has a Jewish daughter and Jewish grandchildren. That will help with the Jewish vote. Even Jews, and I'm one of them, know that Obama was a complete failure and turned against Israel, and Hillary is no better. If you want to return to a normal world, you have to have a strong, positive message, and hopefully people realize that someone with Mr. Trump's attitude should make people realize he has nothing to gain by running for president, because he has a lot to give to this country. He's a brilliant man with friends to match, and we should all follow in his footprints. So here's a Jewish woman writing this. So, idiotic analysis. Another one, Jews Jews overwhelmingly vote for Democrats on most issues. Trump is functionally Democrat positions. Plus, unlike Dems, he is pro-Israel, pro-defense, pro-border security, pro-eradicating Islamic terrorism. That's why this article was not particularly compelling to me. And I'm saying that not as a supporter of Donald Trump, but I'm saying that just analyzing that and looking at it, what's been discussed here. Okay, a couple of other interesting news items, painful news items from the Middle East as well. Tell you what, Joey, let's grab an audio clip. Itamar Marcus, if you've never been to palwatch.org, go there. Take a few minutes. This is an Israeli group monitoring what is being broadcast on Palestinian media, Palestinian state TV, different broadcasts that get out, even social media as well. And you want to understand what the Palestinian people are hearing and getting fed. Let's go to clip number one.
Palestinian media is the expression of the Palestinian leadership, and this is why it's so critical. We're not talking about a free media like there is in Canada or in the United States or in Western European countries. This is a completely, completely controlled media. Truth isn't necessarily significant, which means that inciting to hatred of Israelis is significant, is a major, major component.
So you're not just talking about one of 380 stations that you can choose from, but a major state-run network that people will be watching, people will be listening to, people will be gaining information from. We know, for example, that CNN is not as influential as it may have been in the past, that Fox has far more viewers than CNN. Fox News has far more viewers than CNN on a weekly basis. However, if you go to the airport, you'll see CNN on the monitors. There are other places where you'll just see CNN on. I don't mean every airport all the time, but very commonly. So let's just say that CNN was constantly broadcasting information that the Jews were vermin, that the Jews were out to destroy and kill, that the Jews this, the Jews that. And let's say that you didn't have Fox News or MSNBC, or you didn't have ABC or CBS or NBC with other viewpoints, and you just had that, How would people be influenced? What would they be thinking? Let's listen to clip number two and just get a feel for some of what is being broadcast through Palestinian media.
One of the great demonizations that we see, and the most horrific demonizations, is the referral to Jews as monkeys and pigs. This is based on a Quranic source, but we've seen it repeatedly on children's programs. Young children, younger than 10, reciting poems which refer to the Jews as descendants of monkeys and pigs, also referring to Jews as the enemies of Allah. One of the poems referred to them as the most evil amongst all creations. These are all children's programs.
What a shame.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, if you want to hear some of what children are exposed to, adults are exposed to with Palestinian media, we're not just talking about Hamas. We're talking about the Palestinian Authority, the so-called moderate partner in the Middle East, as we talk about Islamic propaganda, Islamic mentality towards Israel, towards the West. This is Michael Brown. You're listening to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Listen to this. This is posted on palwatch.org, Palestinian Media Watch, just 4 days ago. Child killer, the new Palestinian superhero, Samir Kuntar, who murdered a four-year-old Israeli by smashing her head with the butt of his rifle, is the newest Palestinian Authority Fatah hero and role model. Here's a poster that I'm looking at a rally commemorating him. He was killed by Israelis recently, and as a result of that, he's now being hailed as a martyr. So here's the background. Samir Kuntar is a Lebanese terrorist who in 1979 infiltrated Israel and murdered four Israelis. Kuntar murdered his youngest victim, four-year-old, in Ataran, by repeatedly smashing her head with his rifle butt. What kind of human being does that? After being released from Israeli prison in 2006, it was part of a swap that Israel engaged in. I mean, they'll swap hundreds of prisoners to get back just, you know, the bodies of some of their Israeli soldiers, and of course often criticized for the extreme measures they'll take to protect their own, because now they are releasing murderers to go back and murder. After being released from Israeli prison in 2006, Kuntar joined Hezbollah and was planning terror attacks against Israel when he was killed in Syria last week. He is now the newest Palestinian Authority Fatah superhero. And they give a list of 15 statements by Palestinian Authority and Fatah officials glorifying Kuntar and his, quote, heroic act of murder. The Commission of Prisoners and Released Prisoners Affairs established a house of mourning for the most senior of Arab prisoners, martyr Shahid Samir Kuntar, who Israel assassinated. Martyr Samir Kuntar is a Palestinian symbol. We gather today in honor of Martyr Kuntar in order to accompany him to his wedding, namely Martyr's funeral, as a martyr in the name of all the Palestinian people, and in order to emphasize to him and to everyone fighting for Palestine, you will remain present throughout our lives. We will not forget your heroic acts and sacrifice. We will talk about you with all future generations. We will tell them, Kuntar, rub the nose of the occupier in the dust here. And it goes on and on. He calling him one of the Arab resistance heroes, calling him a heroic martyr. And these are statements from news agencies, all from Palestinian leaders, one after another after another. And then his picture. I'm not going to read all the statements to you. It would bore you. 15 statements. Official PA TV reporter. Martyr Samir Kuntar was born in 1962 in the village of Abe in Mount Lebanon, joined the Palestinian Liberation Front when he was 14 years old and joined its training camps and created for himself a history of unrelenting struggle. How sick, how pathetic, how ugly, how despicable. But friends, hear me. This is not just a reflection of Palestinian hatred of Israelis. It is a reflection of radical Islamic theology. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Austin in Atlanta, Georgia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
I wanted to ask, why is it that so many people, especially on the left, are so adamant about defending Islam at all costs, but they have no interest in defending Christianity, no matter like how much it gets attacked?
Yeah, it's a great question, Austin. And I feel personally that I need to do some deeper reflecting on this and then perhaps write up a substantial article or do a substantial broadcast where I try to analyze this, not just from a spiritual perspective, but from a secular perspective as well. But on a spiritual level, Austin, it seems evident that both are of the spirit of the world, that the radical left and the radical Muslim, as much as they are ideologically opposed, I mean, the radical leftist, for example, would be an absolute proponent of redefining marriage, and the radical Muslim would kill two gay men or one practicing gay man. So they actually are having conflicts in Europe, for example, where you've got this extreme tolerance on the one side, and then on the other side, this extreme militancy, and there's literally been bloodshed. I mean, Muslims killing gay activists and things like that in countries like Holland. So, yeah, they're in complete conflict, and yet there is, as you say, this strange support. It seems to be an irrational support, a defense of Islam. And you'd think, come on, if the left is having a problem with Christian beliefs and Christian values, the left is having a problem with that, it would have tons more problems with Islam. So somehow it seems to make this defense of Islam a major issue here. Breitbart.com has an article, "The New Left, New York Magazine Makes Light of Female Genital Mutilation." So on the surface of things, Austin, what's obvious to me is the spiritual connection. You know, Herod and Pilate became friends when they both joined together against Jesus. So you can have false religion and you can have humanism, and what they share in common is they are both of the spirit of the world. They are both of the spirit of this age, and therefore what they have in common is opposition to the gospel. Just like you'll find a black supremacist and white supremacist have in common an admiration of Hitler and a hatred of the Jews. So it's that same kind of thing. Now, there are probably some ideological reasons for this as well. And this whole concept of, well, you know, they're persecuted, they're misunderstood. Maybe there is some indictment of the West. This is the fault of the West and our imperialism and our sticking our nose where it doesn't belong. And that's why the Islamic world is getting so upset with us. And, you know, there could be some of that as well. But I want to reflect on it a little more deeply. But the one thing that is clear to me, as I said, is spiritually, humanism and radical Islam are both of the spirit of the world. And therefore, humanism somehow does obeisance to Islam. But stay tuned, because I want to weigh in with more on that. It's obviously a question I've thought about as well. Hey, out of time, but thank you, sir, for the question. Much appreciated.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. Friends, we are out of time, but there's still time for you to help us with a year-end tax-deductible gift. If we've been a blessing to you, just say it like that. If we've been a blessing to you in 2015, and you want to energize us as we move into 2016, help us with a year-end tax-deductible gift. Go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on Donate. My bottom line today, yes, humanism and Islam unite in this. They are both of the spirit of this world. So was President Bush right about Islam? And what can we expect from America in 2016?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I said at the beginning of 2015 that I felt and sensed that 2015 would be the year of pushback. It would be the year of Christians waking up and saying enough is enough and beginning to stand more and more for what is right, regardless of cost or consequence. And we've been seeing that through the year. And I have some expectation for what's coming in 2016. I'm not claiming to have a detailed prophetic word of the next 10 world events that are going to take place, but I do have a sense, and it's based on prayer, analysis of what's happening in the world, just reflection and understanding. I have a sense of what's coming in 2016. I want to talk to you about that and some more comments in Islam. We spent a good part of the first hour talking about aspects of Islam, talked about President Bush being wrong by saying Islam is the religion of peace. That's why Hillary Clinton and President Obama are now quoting him. But we'll get back to some of that as well and your call. So here's what I want to do. Tomorrow I've got a special teaching I'm going to give during the whole hour. So because of that, I won't be taking calls. But every day this week, I want to give you extra opportunity to call in every day that we're on live, of course. So I want to give you extra opportunity to call in 866-34-TRUTH with any question that you'd like to ask. Any question of any kind that you'd like to ask in any area of expertise I have, that's because Friday our phone lines normally ring off the hook with folks calling in with questions. We're unable to get to everyone. Many people are unable to get through. So I want to give you a little more opportunity as we come to the end of the year to join us to call in. Hey, if you've been blessed by this radio broadcast, if you've been blessed by articles that I've written, if you've been blessed by materials that we've put out, books, videos, then why not stand with us at the end of this year? A great way to express your appreciation is in a tangible way of saying, hey, we know there are expenses with everything you do. We know that your radio show is listener supported. We know your YouTube channel is listener supported. We know that you're not paid to be writing so many of the articles that you're putting out. So we want to express our appreciation. A great way to do it is by praying for us. Another great way to do it is by sharing the articles, sharing the broadcast with others, telling folks, hey, tune in. Hey, check this out. Hey, listen. Hey, have you read this? And then if you can help us financially, whatever you're able to do, whatever's on your heart, your year-end gift of any size would be a tremendous blessing to us and would really energize us as we come into 2016. So to stand with us, go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-788. Excuse me. Why am I saying go to the website and give you a phone number? Let's try that again. Go to the website, askdrbrown.org, and click on donate. Let's try that once more. Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on donate. So you understand, you know, you'll maybe hear the news, Rush Limbaugh or something like that gets, you know, massive contract and he's $20 million a year he's paid or whatever the amount of money is. Hey, whatever he can generate, more power to him. He's a businessman. We pay to be on the radio. So the radio stations are not paying me to be on the air. If that day ever came, that'd be awesome. Awesome for everybody that the stations could afford it, that take the load off us where we could put the funds into something else. But no, we pay to be on the radio. Just as most all the programs you're listening to on these stations, we pay to be on the radio to make money. No. To get a message out. To get a message out. And we raise money to pay the bills to get the message out to more and more and more people. So we're listener sponsored. If you're listening to my voice right now, that's because somebody helped us. So if you want to be one of those people, join with us. Join with our support team. Your year-end tax-deductible gift would be a great blessing. So go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. I want to talk to you about 2016, talk to you about Islam. Take your calls right here.
Send it, Lord. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. I saw someone posted a comment to my article today on charisma that says we can work together. Let's work together in 2016. Let's make a difference together in 2016. And I share some of my calling to be a voice, to be your voice, and how wherever I travel around America, around the world, people thank me. And they'll use those words, thank you for being a voice. Thank you for being my voice. In other words, I'm articulating what's on your heart. I'm saying through the platform I have on radio, on TV, on internet, through books, through preaching, I'm articulating what's in your heart and thereby getting that message out to others. And I saw a comment, you know, people were expressing appreciation and so on. And then someone said, I'm confused. Where in the Bible did God call anyone into the ministry of being a voice for moral and our cultural revolution? Why is it that even Christ himself was not concerned about this great ministry? Oh, I'm not sure if this is man or woman who wrote this, but I'd encourage you to read the words of Jesus again. I'd encourage you to read what he said about us being salt and light, salt of the earth and light of the world. I'd encourage you to read what he talked about in terms of justice, what he talked about in terms of the kingdom of God, and what he talked about in terms of ministry to the poor and the hurting. These are all aspects of moral and cultural revolution. Wow. Very interesting. Very interesting to say that that's not even a scriptural calling. 866-34-TRUTH. Iran Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei sent out a Christmas message. Posted this on Twitter. If Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, were among us today, he would not spare a second to fight the heads of oppression and global arrogance, and he would not tolerate the hunger and puzzlement of billions of people who are being exploited and pushed towards war, corruption, and warmongering by the big powers. Well, I'm sure if Jesus were physically here speaking, he'd be speaking to corrupt powers as well, and speaking to hypocritical religious leaders and calling sinners to repent, just as he did on this earth. What's interesting is that terms like arrogant powers and heads of oppression have been used by Khamenei in the past to refer to the United States and, quote, the Zionist regime. In recognition of Jesus Christ's birth anniversary, Khamenei met with the mother of a, quote, Christian martyr who lost life during the Iraq-Iran war. So here on the one hand, reaching out to a Christian. On the other hand, if you're a Muslim, you convert to Christianity in Islam, in Iran, you will be killed. Yeah, and I'm sure there's not going to be a protest from Khamenei either. 866-348-7884. So real quick answer, then I want to go to some calls. When President Bush says Islam is a religion of peace, he's misinformed. At best, there is a stream of Islam which emphasizes tolerance towards other religions and peaceful coexistence. At best. And undoubtedly, there is a stream of Islam which can be traced more directly to Muhammad's actions and words, especially towards the end of his career, that is violent and that practices religious coercion. That cannot be denied. And it is only, in my view, willful ignorance. In other words, refusing to acknowledge another side of the argument or refusing to hear it and not wanting to acknowledge there is another side that can possibly deny that radical Islam is a valid expression of Islam, both historically and theologically. 866-34-TRUTH. Look, there are hundreds of Islamic leaders who have gathered together, leading theologians and jurists and things like that, and have agreed together on aspects of radical Islam. And this has been in recent years. And then others have differed. And they are both found within Islam. You cannot deny it. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Des Moines, Iowa. Paul, hey, how's the weather there today?
Right now it's a bit snowy, to say the least.
Yeah, well, that's expected, man. I'm in Eastland, Texas, and I had to drive through a minor blizzard last night to get here, and there's snow all over the ground. It's like 35 degrees, man. Texas!
Yeah, you Texans set it up this way.
Wow.
The question happened to be about Sharia law and the Talmud. They seem to be almost closely connected to one another and somewhat a type of belief or emphasis in the radical, whether it be radical Zionist or they're a radical Islamist, if you will, who adopted both of those apart from the teachings of Moses and the law that way. Would you agree to that, or would that be something that you would not agree with?
I agree and I disagree. I agree that there are many similarities. For those who are not familiar with Judaism and Islam in any depth, they are both law-based religions. In other words, they are religions that emphasize keeping strict commandments, dietary laws, ritual purification, and that it's believed that basically everything you're doing has specific instructions with it in terms of what's pleasing to God and what isn't. So for a religious Jewish man, when he goes to the bathroom, there are prayers that he recites and words of thanksgiving that he says. And obviously, Islam and Judaism have dietary laws and things like that. And when you look at legal discussions, Paul, they are often very, very similar. They can seem almost convoluted to an outsider. And why are you even caring about this detail or that detail? And yet, those details are plainly laid out in Islamic law and Talmudic law. And they are holistic, meaning every area of life. They're comprehensive. And especially to an outsider, they can seem very oppressive. So tremendous similarities. And remember, Muhammad got a lot of his information from religious Jewish teachers. A lot of the traditions that are preserved in the Quran about biblical characters and events, they're not from the Bible. They're from Jewish tradition that was just passed on. That some of it was just, you know, storytelling that got passed on that now became believed as accurate in the Quran by Muslims. That being said, there are differences in terms of Islam's reliance on the sword. There are differences because of Muslims wanting to bring others under this, whereas for traditional Jews, let the world live how it lives, and traditional Jews would say the traditions, the laws, were just for them. So there would definitely be differences. The conversionary aspects of Islam and the reliance on the sword, those would be very different from Judaism. And then the degree of modesty required, it's very high in traditional Judaism for women, but it goes even further with Islam in terms of the degree of covering, but very, very similar in many, many ways. And I don't say that to denigrate either religion. I say it to say the other, in terms of law-based religions that have these traditions that developed. And then you have to realize, Paul, here, watch an NFL game, right? You know, they're like, well, what's the ruling here? Well, in this case, because this happened and this didn't happen, then we have this third rule here, and it's so complex you're thinking, who in the world could even know all of that, right? The same way, you go to your court, local court, and you've got some issue you think is a simple issue. They say, no, we've got this law here that came into effect with this county, but then that was overruled here and there. Well, national law, as it develops, that's going to be massive. The same thing with the Bible and the Quran. That initial laws were given, but now each generation has to apply them, and then it gets expanded until you have a massive, massive body of law. That's what you have in both Judaism and Islam. So your comments are not off target. They're on target as long as you recognize that Islamic law can be more radical and relies on the sword, and that would be a bigger difference between that and Talmudic law.
That's what I was going to go with as far as the expression of Nicolaitans that Jesus had spoke of, how much he hated that, perverting or making that law book so massive to where no one can actually keep any of the law anyway.
Yeah, now, of course, a religious Jew, and by the way, the practices of the Nicolaitans that Jesus spoke of, we really don't know what that was. There's a lot of speculation. I've read the best scholarship on it, and the best scholars seem to say we really don't know what the Nicolaitans practiced. But that being said, Paul, traditional Jews would say this is livable. Traditional Muslims would say it is livable. But it's really for those who grew up within the system. And the laws that require supernatural faith that are impossible to keep in the natural without divine intervention, you normally find another way to do it. You kind of find some legal loophole to avoid having to live by that. So again, in that sense, some of the traditions make void the word. Jesus had no problem with traditions. He prayed the synagogue. Synagogue, that was a traditional innovation of the Pharisees. But when the traditions contradicted Scripture, you better believe he rebuked that in no uncertain terms. Thank you, sir, for the call. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
By the way, a lot of Islamic tradition is borrowed from Judaism. A lot of the teachings of the Quran that Muhammad had were borrowed from Judaism. He had Christian teachers as well, but it seems the Jewish influence was greater, and the parallels between Islam and Judaism are greater. And then, of course, there are radical, deep differences. And because the Jewish people did not recognize Muhammad as a prophet, ultimately, he turns very hostile towards the Jews. And that hostility is reflected in Islamic thought to this day. 866-34-TRUTH. I want to talk about where we're going in 2016, some thoughts that I have. But first, we'll go back to your calls in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Adrian, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. Thank you for taking my call. I've talked to you here a couple of weeks ago, and I'm trying to understand, Dr. Brown, when I've gotten connected with you and I'm learning so much, you know, I wished I had you every day to grab and ask questions when it comes to the Hebrew roots and stuff like that. And my concern is this. When I'm out looking, there's so much information on the Internet. You know, I feel like I can trust you, Rabbi Kahn, Mark Belt, some of those that I've kind of, you know, you all seem to know each other, even Jewish voice, Rabbi. But, you know, like this morning, I came upon one rabbi. His name is Ben Dinoon. He does Israel's News Live. And he was talking about Esau and how God's going to judge Esau. And he relates that to the Pope, and he's saying there's like 14 Jewish rabbis that signed on to a reconciliation document in December. And he cautions about the one-world government. And then I sit there and wonder, okay, because he had your picture on a clip for about 10 seconds in his video. And I'm thinking, okay, does that mean Dr. Brown agrees with him? You know, and when it comes to messianic movements, I think just like any faith, you wonder, who can I listen to? Because in Wyoming, we don't have a messianic fellowship, and I can trust rabbis that aren't off on some sort of tangent, even when they're messianic. And, you know, I listen to like 119 Ministries, I'm sure you've heard of them, and I really like what they talk about. But I sit there and I tell my wife, I says, how much of this should I believe? You know, some people get
excited there are some extremes and real concerns I'd have. So, Adrian, do you have my book, 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices?
No, sir, but I'll get it. I've got our hands are stained with blood, and then our divine healer.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, get hold of 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices. It's readily available. That will help you, and you can just go straight to the relevant questions. I'm not familiar with the gentleman that you mentioned. He would have had my picture up because I wrote an article about the Vatican being wrong on Jews not needing to explicitly put their faith in Jesus in order to be saved or in right relationship with God. There's much of the Vatican statement that I appreciate. Its ongoing repudiation of anti-Semitism, its ongoing repudiation of replacement theology or supersessionism, the idea that the church replaced or superseded Israel in God's plan of salvation, the idea that Jews and Christians can learn from each other and should work together for social justice and to help the poor. Amen to all of that, but I absolutely differ with the idea that there should not be a specific mission to reach Jewish people with the good news. I agree that the goal should not be to get Jews to, quote, convert to Christianity, but rather to get Jews to embrace Jesus as the Messiah. But that is not the goal of the Catholic document. That's why these rabbis are so accepting of it, because the Catholic Church is basically saying, hey, we recognize you as a legitimate religion, as an elder religion to us, and we see no reason to proselytize. And that's why these rabbis are accepting it. So that alone would give... Listen, I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled in many ways to see the dialogue deepen. But let me tell you, the one person who wouldn't be welcome in that room of dialogue would be someone like me or other Jewish believers in Jesus, because we're the ones saying, time out here. Paul, Peter, John, all of the first disciples, they are all Jewish followers of Jesus the Messiah, and they all said that he's the Messiah of Israel, and they would die for that cause to bring the good news to our own people. So, Adrian, what I'd encourage you to do is to do your best to swim in the middle of the stream. Everybody tries to do that.
Yeah.
But you don't want to be pulled in fringe directions as if the entire church, through its entire history, has been completely wrong on fundamental issues. We recognize that many ways the church strayed at different times from different aspects of things, but the idea that the entire church throughout its entire history has been wrong on things is obviously a dangerous position. I would only focus on those things that deepen my devotion to Yeshua, as not just as a Jewish teacher, but as Lord, that deepen my worship of him, that deepen my liberty in the spirit and my desire to share the good news with others. And those things which become fascinating, but then somewhat binding and confusing, you want to be on your guard from. But check out the 60 Questions book. And once you get it, go through it. You can always reach out to us again on the air, or you can write to our ministry, and we have a team member who's highly educated, and this is a Jewish believer, who's glad to answer specific questions as they come up with further detail. All right?
I appreciate it, Dr. Brown. Thank you.
Sure thing. God bless you.
You too.
866-34-TRUTH. Do I have time for another call? Yeah, I do. Let's go to Melbourne, Florida. Larry, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Good. I was actually at your yeshiva class at the Southeast Regional MJAA conference that you broadcast live at recently.
Yes, thank you. Great.
And I'm actually sitting and doing my yeshiva paper on it currently. So I'm asking you a question as a student who is writing up a paper for you.
Okay, great.
For the IMS class. So I'm going through the seven keys to messianic prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you taught on. And I did really well until I got to the seventh one. And the Messiah is the ideal representative of his people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the examples that you gave was Hosea 11:1,
yep,
which is quoted in Matthew 2:15. Now, two keys before that was to make sure that prophecy is always looked at in its full context.
Yes, sir.
Of how it was used. So when I went to Hosea 11:1, mm-hmm, which of course you know, it says, when Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. Well, that sounds real good. But then it says, but the more I called Israel, the further they went,
exactly,
from me.
So it's, yeah, hard, so tell you what, let me just jump in so I can answer this before I'm out of time on the air, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The short answer is this. Often you have to look at the context. And when you look at the context, like Isaiah 7 through 11, it gives you better understanding of Isaiah 7, 14, which is then quoted in Matthew chapter 1, verse 23. But when you look at the context and you see, okay, contextually, this was speaking about Israel. Israel in its infancy, isn't even Israel in its disobedience, then what can I deduce from that? It was not meant to be taken as a prophecy. Rather, the context indicates to me that Matthew is saying, as it happened to Israel, so also it happens to the Messiah. Same thing, Psalm 41, the one who ate with me has betrayed me. David, in his own weakness and sin, is talking there. It's not a direct prophecy, but rather it's saying, as it happened to David, so also it happened to the Messiah. So the context can indicate, sir, how we are to interpret it. Is it a literal prophecy or is it a type?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So was it tolerant Islam in Somalia that banned Christmas celebrations? Was that the case, or was it tolerant Islam in Brunei that banned public Christmas celebrations? Just some questions to ask. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to do my best to get to some questions you have, even if they are random, meaning unrelated to what we're talking about today. But I do want to share some thoughts on where we are going in 2016. But first, as I'm speaking to many listeners right now in Texas, the weather, wow, some tragedy, some terrible loss of life with some natural disasters over the weekend. I'm right now in Eastland, Texas, about an hour and 45 minutes outside of Dallas. And I got in last night. By the way, number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I got in last night, and the flight was delayed leaving Charlotte, North Carolina. We started in gate B7, then we're moved to gate B5, then gate B3. So there's always this weird feeling, okay, what's going on? Then there was, suddenly we see commotion and heard a noise. There was a fellow, apparently a diabetic, collapsed on the floor, so he had to get medical attention. Didn't make it on the flight, sadly. And then we were delayed leaving, and then we were delayed landing. We were getting rerouted, holding pattern because of weather issues. So by the time we landed, it was real late. It was maybe midnight or past midnight Eastern Standard Time. And then took forever for the luggage to come out. Forever, exaggerated. You know, maybe a half hour. And then had to wait about a half hour for the bus to arrive to go to the rental car terminal. And then you got to make all these other stops in other terminals. So by the time I got in the vehicle, it was about 1 a.m. now, Eastern Standard Time. And I'm a late night person. I told Nancy if I was tired in the least or if the roads were dangerous that I'd just get a place to stop for the night. But I drove, and initially it was just rainy, and then the rain let up, and then maybe, I don't know, 20 miles or so outside of Eastland, I ran into a blizzard. I mean, there were signs maybe a half hour earlier, severe blizzard warnings, get off the road, find a place place to stay or something like that. But it was, I didn't know how far away. It was talking about Texas Panhandle. I didn't know how close I was to the Texas Panhandle, so I thought, okay, I'll just, you know, the weather's fine right now. And then suddenly it was serious snow. So we just slowed down from 70 to 60 to 40 to 30 and just kind of, you know, the cars on the road just all in the same lane, no one trying to pass each other, just going like that. And it was, in that sense, you know, safe, didn't skid for a split second. If I'd done that, I instantly would have, you know, just looked for the next exit, found a place to stay. But man, Texas, who expected this? So while a lot of the country's saying whatever happened to global warming, huh? You're saying, well, we're not getting it here. And for those that suffered severe personal loss, our hearts go out to you. Oh, all right. So where are we going in 2015? I feel as 2015, where are we going in 2016? I feel that to the extent 2015 has been a year of pushing back against the growing onslaught against the faith in America, the 2016, and this may just be self-evident, not rocket science, but 2016 is really a time of polarization, that we will see the divisions in our nation like we haven't seen in a long time, and in some ways in our history, because there are new issues that are being discussed, that each side is going to take a more entrenched position. And that means, especially during the political season, we're going to need wisdom that we don't get in the flesh in our conflicts. We come back, I'm going to take some of your phone calls, give you more thoughts on this. And atheism, Islam, going up or down? What do the experts say?
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, I've got a special word of encouragement for you tomorrow, heading into the new year, based on two words of Scripture, but God. So be sure to tune in to tomorrow's broadcast. If you miss any part of it, just go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on Latest Broadcast. Be sure while you're there to click on Latest Videos. We've uploaded a few recent videos, some with callers to the radio station. We've got one where I was asked about Christians keeping the dietary laws. We've got another where, just from last week, 16-year-old Jewish caller wanted to know how I can be sure about the existence of God. And another one where I take issue with President Obama's three of his top 10 items for 2015. So check out our latest videos. I was just sent a note from one of our regular listeners, a dear sister who often comment on our articles and stands with us in so many ways. So I'm familiar with her name because I've seen it so many times on social media or following my articles. And she was thrilled. I believe her teenage son, she hears my voice on his cell phone. What? And he was watching my video on Transanity, the latest in Transanity. And he said it's all over Facebook, that video circulating. And then I got a note from a friend, an Orthodox Jew who lives in another country. He's not a believer, but is sympathetic to the faith. And he said he was shocked. He came into his house the other day, and his mother was watching one of my YouTube videos on radical Islam. Now, she knew I was a Jewish believer in Jesus. She might have been hesitant to watch it, but she's so concerned about radical Islam, she's watching. He walks in. He's known me for years. He's shocked to see that on her computer screen. And then another friend of mine, a Jewish believer, writes to me, and we've been friends for many, many years, but his father has never liked me because of us both being Messianic Jews and me being an influence on his son's faith in earlier years. And he says, hey, check this out. He said, this article you wrote about the Quran, this supposed peaceful verse of the Quran, is actually quoting from the Talmud, and it's for the Jews, not for Muslims. He said a friend of his dad sent it to him saying, check out this article exposing this thing in the Quran. And the father sent it to the son, my friend, and he was excited. He got a kick out of it, and because the friend didn't know I was a Messianic Jew writing that. And now the father was kind of smiling instead of being hostile towards me. So by God's grace, our material gets out into all kinds of different hands and continues to spread. In fact, I wrote an article in Charisma News Today, which is entitled Let's Make a Difference Together in 2016. If we've been a blessing to you this year, take a minute to read it. Go to AskDrBrown.org, click on Latest Article, and you'll get a link to this. Let's Make a Difference Together in 2016. And I believe you'll be blessed. I believe that you'll be helped. I believe that you'll be encouraged by it. And if we've been a blessing to you, why not stand with us? Why not help us with a year-end tax-deductible donation? Be greatly, greatly appreciated. 866-34-TRUTH. To stand with us, go to Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown, AskDrBrown.org. Click on Donate. Your year-end gifts will be a great blessing to us. All right, let's go to Toronto, Ontario. Our friend Sergio, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
I just wanted to ask you about a recommendation for a book on history of the church, something not too long, maybe 100 to 300 pages, and maybe also on maybe the forefathers of the United States, maybe about that they can teach me about what they believed and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, if you're looking for history of the church that's that short, I mean, I don't know. Maybe Church History in Plain Language by Bruce Shelley would be the best place to go. A Church History in Plain Language. Let's see. It's as simple and clear as you're going to get. It's still hundreds of pages, but you can get it on Kindle. Oh, check it out. Just $5 on Kindle. What do you know? So check that out, Church History in Plain Language by Bruce Shelley. That's S-H-E-L-L-E-Y. That's the first one that comes to mind. It's highly regarded, and it is laid out simply. As far as what the founding fathers believed, there's an excellent new book by Joshua Charles called Liberty's Secrets. And you'll get in depth, in their own words, what they believed on a number of key issues. Liberty's Secrets by Joshua Charles, The Lost Wisdom of America's Founders. All right, I'd highly recommend that. I had Josh on the air to talk with me about that, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
You are very welcome. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Linda in New York. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing very well, thank you.
I have a very, it has nothing to do with what you're talking about today, but I have a question about marriage and commitment to marriage. So I was in a marriage for over 20 years with a verbally abusive man, and so I walked out about 5 or so years ago, could be a little bit more than 5 years, and with my son, who was 10 at the time. At the time when I left, he was very angry and said some horrible things, that he was going to tear me apart with his bare hands. And, you know, so I left, and it's been, like I said, that many years. But lately, and I had a lot of, you know, anger towards him, and I went to a lawyer and I filed for a divorce. And spent tens of thousands of dollars, and his lawyer just kept fighting everything and wouldn't agree to give me anything at all. So then he approached me and said, why don't we just drop this with the lawyers, spending all this money on lawyers. I'll give you what I can when I can. So I agreed to it and dropped everything. He really hasn't given me anything for 5 years. I mean, once in a while, he'll give me money to buy his son a coat or a pair of shoes.
Yeah, hey, just to jump in, Linda, I want to be sure that I can help you. Obviously, I'm not physically involved there. I'm not.
I don't know the situation.
And I'm not your pastor. So just in the interest of being helpful, how could I be of help to you?
I'm just wondering what to do. Recently, I had these feelings that I made a promise. You know, you make a promise when you marry someone. And did I do the right thing leaving? Was that all correct to do? I mean,
yeah. All right. So Linda,
feeling like I should be taking care of him. He's older. He's sick. Maybe he needs my help.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Linda,
confusion.
Yeah, I'm so sorry you've been through that. And my wife and I, Nancy and I, in March, God willing, celebrate 40 years of marriage. So I don't know what it's like to live through what you're living through. But Nancy does, because her mom was married 4 times. And she was often in difficult situations between mother and stepfather. And one of my sons-in-law, his mother was married 5 times. So we understand the trauma of divorce, the pain, the challenge. But again, I've never been in your shoes. But from a Christian viewpoint, Linda, unless you were literally afraid of potential bodily harm, and from what you're saying, he just spoke with anger because he was not physically abusive to you over the years, I would do my best to reconcile. I would do my best to say, okay, I made a lifetime commitment. I've had anger in my own life, and I want to reconcile. Hey, if we can't be remarried, then I want to be your friend and I want to help you. I made a lifelong commitment to you. It would be one thing if he committed adultery against you and refused to repent and was living with another woman. You said he did or he didn't?
He did.
He did, yeah. If he
but
committed,
he didn't live with the other person or anything like that.
Yeah, did he repent of it, recognize it was wrong?
Yes.
Yeah, then, you know, how does God treat us, Linda? I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's easy. And I don't know what you've lived through with verbal abuse and things like that, but especially because you're struggling with it and all of the legal battles have not worked out, what if you really just sought the Lord earnestly and said, God, I'm your daughter. I do whatever is pleasing to you, Lord. I forgive him from the heart for the things he's done against me. I ask you to forgive me for what I've done wrong. And then reach out and just say, hey, I want to be here to help you. We were married all these years. If I committed some horrific act and I came to God asking for mercy, yeah, there'd be consequences to that act, but he would forgive. And that's how we need to treat others. Perhaps there's a way where you can reconcile, Linda. I would really pray, get your heart right, and reach out to him. And if his reaction is skeptical or harsh, you could understand that. But maybe the Lord can work a miracle of reconciliation. We'll pray for that. May the Lord do it.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Here's an interesting report. Again, as I look ahead to 2016, it just seems self-evident, especially with an election year, that we are going to see the deepest divides in our country we've seen in a long time, religious and ideological. And even with some of the recent rhetoric going on in different quarters, even deeper racial divides, it really will be a year of polarizing if things go as it seems they will. What does it mean on a practical level? On the one hand, we have to be all the more committed to what we believe is right and true because we'll be bombarded. Our side will be bombarded, and our views will be ridiculed and mocked in the public square like never before. On the other hand, we cannot simply divide socially over differences, and in particular, politically within the same camps. In other words, if we are fighting for similar goals, but you prefer one candidate, I prefer another, we still have to stand together on the larger goals. And then we have to be bridge builders in the midst of the polarizing. We have to be bridge builders in the midst of the difficulties and challenges and polarization rather than simply stake out our position. There is a report on NPR News, and it's actually widely circulating, a Pew Religion report, Pew Forum report, Pew Research Center. And this is now being analyzed, just looking at a discussion of this on NPR News. But basically, what's being expected worldwide is the continued growth of Islam, so that by the year 2050, it's getting closer and closer to Christianity in the world population, and the increasing decline of atheism. So with all of the atheistic arrogance that all the outdated, outmoded religious ideas are being dismissed by more and more educated people, actually, atheism looks like it is on the decline. Now, what's interesting is that demographically speaking, one reason for the growth of Islam worldwide is the high birth rate. But in each country where more and more education comes in, or more liberal traditions come in, or liberal ways of life, I might say, that the birth rate drops more and more and more. Has that been adequately figured in? Also, I don't know how much the supernatural growth of the gospel is being factored in continents like Africa and Asia. Sometimes that is grossly underreported. I was reading in one book where it said that in Africa, for every one person who converts to Christianity, seven convert to Islam. That may be true in some parts of Africa, but in other parts of Africa that were Islamic strongholds, the Islamic population has dropped dramatically and Christian population has increased dramatically, often in very raw form and needing great amount of discipleship and teaching. But that has happened as well. But in any case, numbers don't prove things. The Jesus movement began as a very, very small movement, and of course it's shaken the entire world. So numbers themselves don't mean positive or negative influence. However, it's interesting to watch these trends. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Etafe in Salisbury, Maryland. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown.
Hi. Hello.
I just had a question to ask. Also, on that note, I'd also like to thank you for all the resources you've given me over the past year. As of this month, I have become a torchbearer.
Oh, so, awesome. Thank you, sir. Much appreciated.
But my question had to do with Constantine and his influence on Christianity and as far as Jewish persecution. There's some scholars that surmise that he actually was, I would call a sheep in wolf's clothing. He's trying to get as much Jewish influence out of Christianity as possible because his predecessor, of course, destroyed the temple, and he was trying to have his own great triumphal arc set up in that respect, so he became more of a farce instead of just a true Christian.
Yeah, let me
know what you think about that.
Yeah, here's my thought, and I'm glad we've been a blessing to you, and thank you so much for becoming one of our monthly supporters. Greatly appreciate it. Okay, in short, the conversion of Constantine, however deep it was certainly real to him in that he now wanted to convert the whole Roman Empire into Christianity as he understood it. At the same time, he was the emperor. He never stopped being the emperor, and there were positive things that he did for the spread of Christianity and negative things because he did it in a political way. And it's clear also that while he did not violently persecute Jews, you know, launch a crusade against Jews to kill them or something like that in any wide-scale way, he did not want the church community in dependence on the Jewish people. And it was under Constantine that it was officially decreed that Easter, the celebration of the death and resurrection of Jesus, would be done at a fixed time. Hence, we have Good Friday. It's always going to be on a Friday in these church traditions, as opposed to in harmony with the Passover date that the Jewish community would set, because that's how one half of the early church celebrated it. One half got a fixed date, you know, a Friday, just like December 25th. It's always going to be that date. That's Christmas, or Thanksgiving is the last Thursday of November. Well, just have a fixed date, and then the other tradition was to, no, do it the way the earliest believers would have, which is in harmony with the Passover. So when the Jewish community is celebrating the Passover, those dates are then set accordingly for the church. So he distanced himself, and in those ways definitely had anti-Semitic tendencies. That was just part of his heritage, it would seem. And perhaps if there were Christian leaders who also shared those views, anti-Jewish, anti-Judaistic, or even anti-Semitic views, that could have influenced him as well, to the extent that the Jewish people were demonized in some church theology at that time. That could have influenced him. As to speculation that he was trying to do something similar to Titus and Vespasian with the destruction of the Second Temple, or Hadrian with the basic demolition of Jerusalem and the expelling Jews from Jerusalem, in my view, but I'm not an expert on Constantine, in my view, that would be exaggerated to think that he wanted to see himself in that vein. But again, I'm not an expert in that aspect of things. But certainly, there were clear anti-Jewish tendencies that he had, which then became worked out in his expression of Christianity. Hey, out of time, but thank you for the call. If you live in the greater Charlotte area and want to be part of a great event in 2016, helping us to launch forth in 2016 and blessing and encouraging and stirring your heart, the Benham Brothers will speak, I'll speak, free dinner. Go to Night to Ignite, nighttoignite.com, and sign up to join us. My bottom line today, as the polarizing occurs in our society, not only hold your ground, but be a builder of bridges.